Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to author G.D. Grace's A Touch of Grace, Literary Magic, on Blog Talk Radio.
This evening's show is dedicated to the life of a courageous man, born June 18, 1918, who died this day, December 5, 2013. The sacrifices he made under the ominous thumb of oppression would have defeated most. However, he overcame, triumphed, and became one of the world's most influential leaders. His death symbolizes the end of an era that shan't ever be forgotten. Nelson Mandela, A Touch of Grace remembers you. Without your fearlessness, many would never have known freedom. And I say, great man, soar highly in the heavens, propelled by wings of your powerful. Ladies and gentlemen, I am your host, GD. Welcome to A Touch of Grace. Tonight's guest is the author of an intriguing book entitled I-57, The Journey Home. It is a tale of an older African-American man called Frank, who deals with his emotions as an older man who has raised his kids and took care of his wife, and he deals with some of life's harshest realities that come with only the passage of time. I am pleased to have him on the show, so without further ado, I welcome author Daniel Vaughn to A Touch of Grace. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not really sure what's happening with the author that was slated for the show this evening. I'm hoping that he'll be joining us soon, but in the meantime, what I want to do is I want to go to Plan B. Plan B is where I showcase some of my work and I read to you. Now, I have several novels that are waiting. They're on the burner, and I'm waiting to release them, and I'm not really sure what month that will happen, but I definitely have got something slated to happen the first quarter of the year. So what I'll do is I'll go ahead and read from Daddy, and this is some of the promo stuff that I did for it. There were a few weeds around his seed that needed eradicating, and he was determined to rid his garden of them. His deed, his seed, Daddy. Harlem, son, what is so intriguing about those streets out there? I asked in a heartbroken tone that seemed to pull a little more of my soul out of me. He just glared at me with defiant 16-year-old eyes that pierced my confidence with each passing second. What was he thinking? Why couldn't he see that I only wanted the best for him? Why did he love the slick and sly Jensen and not me, the father who adored him? I remembered that one brief moment when he referred to me as Daddy. When did the connection get broken? I stayed intentionally still, waiting for him to respond, but the longer I waited, the fuller his eyes watered, almost spilling the tears that he tried holding back. Then, when I had almost given up hope, he spoke above a whisper and said something that practically finished me off. He said, "You killed her with your weakness. If you were strong enough, she would have never left you for him. A real man protects his women, his home, his son." Ladies and gentlemen, the author just joined us. Let's go ahead and go forward. Hey, Daniel.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I was worried about you for a minute.
Yeah, we had a miscommunication on which number to dial in on, but we're here now.
Okay, no worries, and we definitely are here now, and I'm just glad to have you. So I did introduce you to the listeners and that you're going to be here to talk about your incredible book, I-57, The Journey Home. But before we get off into that, I would like for you to talk to the listeners and myself and just tell us who is Daniel Vaughn, the man, and how everything started for you.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
From an artistic standpoint, I'm a poet. Well, I started out as a poet, spoken word artist, and got involved in the slam scene with the National Poetry Slam and different slams throughout the country. Just pretty much the total basis of it was just writing what I felt, what I knew, what I saw. And so just allowing myself to just learn and hone in on that craft, and was introduced to the story of the book through a friend. He was like, man, I think this would be a great book, a great movie. And so I just kind of said, well, you know what, I think I can write a story. I think I can write a book. And I just got involved from there.
Well, that sounds great. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Meridian, Mississippi. So it's if you're not familiar with Mississippi, it's a town east of Jackson, about an hour and a half. I grew up there. Typical African-American boy, played football, ran track, was in the band, went to Jackson State, pledged Alpha, computer science, mathematics degree. Just my dad pushed me to do everything, so I tried to do everything that I possibly could that was positive.
Oh, that's great. So he was a big support for you. So when did you realize that you had this creative gift?
I would say, and jokingly, I try to have a sense of humor and everything. I was in an honors English class, I think, in the 10th grade, and hopefully she's not listening. And I wrote this poem. We had to write a sonnet, and I wrote this sonnet about this girl looking like a horse. And I got in a lot of trouble, but the teacher was like, dude, you're kind of talented. I wish you would use your talent more positive than what you're doing right now. So with that, and then also growing up in the late 80s, early 90s, also MC, hip-hop, so I did some rapping and, you know, just, and you, I think when I look at my work, it's a culmination of a lot of, one, formal education, but also the hip-hop culture that I grew up in.
All right, that sounds great. And I know I had DJ Pizzo on the show, and he was a disc jockey who was very much into the hip-hop scene. And I know that hip-hop definitely has a depth in it that is just so creative, and it is all about the power of word. Now, before we get off into the book, can you share with us what your experience is like? Because I know that you did some work with Def Jam Poetry. What was that experience like for you?
It was great. It was great. Just the opportunity to take what we've been doing over the years in clubs and libraries and basements and bookstores, being able to take that to a much larger stage, a much bigger viewership, and, you know, just do it from that standpoint. Like, I really enjoy watching Versus and Flow now. And for me, it's great because being a slam poet, you meet all these poets when you travel around the country. And so then I'm seeing people that I know that are on TV, and I'm able to tell my son, like, look at him or look at her. I know them personally. So from a viewership, it's great. As an artist, just being able to stand on stage and know that the words that I wrote are going to be viewed by millions of people, and then even more people just that I've ran into that I never knew. And they were like, man, I saw you on YouTube, and I saw you on HBO. So to me, that's a great feeling because a lot of times I don't write from the standpoint of saying, okay, this is going to be commercial, this is going to sell, or this is going to win a slam. But I write more so from, man, I'm really passionate about this idea. And so I write from that standpoint, and to know that I was able to move forward on those merits, you know, it makes me feel good as an artist. That it's not contrived or something that I made up, but it's something that I wrote that people liked and said, hey, we want to put that on HBO.
Okay, that sounds great, and it was on HBO, and Russell Simmons was behind that. So did you have a chance to have any discussions with Russell Simmons while you were working with Def Jam Poetry?
No, not directly. It was a matter of I knew a guy that was one of the pickers. He heard the poem that we did on HBO, and he was like, man, we really got to get that on the show. So Russell, it was just an in passing, how you doing, nice to meet you. but no sit-down in-depth conversation at all.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's a great platform that he has given, not only just the spoken word artists, but also the comedians. I just love the opportunities that that platform has opened up and have a lot of respect for it. So the question that I want to ask, I've always been curious. I remember back in the day when we had to, for Easter, you know, we had to learn these lines and we had to get up and recite them for the entire church. But, you know, some of those poems that the spoken word artist does, they are very, very long. So how long do you recite them just off of your memory?
I do. And I've gotten to a point now where I'm comfortable reading on stage as well. But one of the things that I try to teach, because I also do spoken word workshops, and one of the things that I'll always try to push forward is if you write the poem well, it's easier to memorize. Let's go back to what you originally said, because I'm very spiritual. I'm real big on reading the Bible. In fact, if you hear a lot of my poems, you'll be like, wow, that's something that he took, a concept that he took from Scripture, because I take a lot of my concepts from Scripture and from science. And so when you read the Bible, it's in rhythm. If you notice, there's a rhythm to it. And most great writings have a rhythm. And so when a poem is written well, it has a rhythm to it. If you notice, small children, I don't know if you have children, but the one thing that I noticed is that they learn the ABCs before they realize what the ABCs really are, because it has that same rhythm. And when you start listening to a lot of the songs that children sing, before they realize what they're singing, it has that same da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And so once it, you know, and once they get that rhythm, they sing anything. They put all the words in there. And so that's the same thing with the poem. If I write my poem on the right rhythm and the words are correct and it's on the right pace, then memorizing it, it's almost as if I'm singing a song. One thing I noticed is that most people can't even say the ABCs all the way through without singing it, because it's become, that's the way we learned it. And so when you learn your poem that way, then it's easier to get on stage.
Wow, that's amazing. And you know what? The way you explained it, it makes all the sense in the world, and I'll never, ever forget it. And that's one thing I like about doing these shows and speaking with other artists, is because I know how I work, but it's always so intriguing, and I'm always learning from other artists, which is why I'm so glad that I have this platform to be able to present the artists to the listeners out there and people that are interested in probably diving in head first. So when you're out there up on stage, because when you're saying the slam, it's almost like a performance, isn't it?
It is. It is. And one of the things that I've been working on myself over the past years is understanding that that's a performance, but I have to make sure that this poem is written well. I don't want to talk about anybody else. I'll talk about myself. Sometimes in my early writing, it wasn't as in-depth or the writing wasn't good. So it was something that you would love to hear me say, but you wouldn't read yourself. And so now that I'm older and I'm realizing that there has to be a breath to my writing, I always make sure that whatever I'm saying on stage is something that you would like regardless of who was reading it. Now, you might love it because I read it, because I'm going to put my own Dan Vaughn-ism on it, but the writing needs to be well enough that if you picked up a book of mine 100 years from now, you say, okay, this is a pretty good poem. I like what this guy's saying, and I like the way that he sang it. Because now as I'm getting older, the one thing I tell a lot of poets, I say, we don't want to be 75 on stage trying to make it. We need to be able to write. When I'm 70, I still want to be writing poems, but I don't want to have to go to the local open mic for you to hear me. I need it to be where you turn around and you read it and be like, I like this.
Okay. What is a common theme in your poems? Is there a common theme, or is it just, you know, vast, like life?
It's pretty vast. I write a lot about what I see and the things that are around me. So, for instance, I have three spoken word CDs. And when you listen to the first one, it's a lot of stuff that's about, there's some love pieces, there's some things, a couple of pieces about my growing up. But then when you turn around and you hear my second CD, I've gotten a few years older. My son is born. And so like the whole poem is, the title of the second CD is Soul Searching. It's about, okay, that poem is about him. So you'll hear poems about him, but also on that same CD, you'll hear a story about me and some friends at a strip club. So it'll span. The third CD, Listening to God, you can definitely, when I listen to it, I definitely hear how I've gotten older. So like the whole Listening to God poem is just my reflection of remembering some things that my grandmother was telling me when I was growing up that it meant something then, but now that I'm older, it means a whole lot more. But at the same time, on the same CD, you got a poem in contrast to that where I'm talking about this crazy situation that I had where I opened the door for a young lady, and to her that meant that I wanted her, and I'm like, nah, I just opened the door for a lady. You know, I didn't think about it like that. And so my writing, so when it comes to the poetry, my writing, it spans a lot of different things, which has been helpful for me because it helps me to go into any venue. I know one of the things that I like about myself, if it's okay to be vain enough to like enough about yourself, is that I know that I can go and I can go. You can invite me to church and say, Dan, do a poem, and I'm not lost. Poem at a church. But then I can go to the club and I can do the poem at the club. I can go to a hip hop setting. I can do a hip hop poem. Whatever set I'm, you, if there's a comedy show, I can do a poem at a comedy show to make people laugh. So whatever I need, I've been able to write in a lot of different veins to put me in a lot of different places, which I think speaks to we're not one-dimensional. And so one of the things that going back to the workshops, I always try to tell, write different things. Don't write this one way all the time.
Okay, you know what? I love how you talk. Your intellect just flows through the words that you speak. And so it sounds like a very perfect segue to go into this because I'm looking at the time, and we've got about 12 minutes. But I definitely wanted to dive into the novel entitled I-57, The Journey Home. And I read a summary of it, and I think that it is a riveting story and what you're dealing with. And It deals with a relationship that spans like a couple of decades or more than a couple of decades, and the character Frank is faced with, it sounds to me like he's faced with the possible loss of his wife. So how did The Journey Home come to be?
The original concept, I have a friend of mine, Ruben Whitmore. He and I were I used to own a restaurant, and he and I were sitting in the restaurant one day, and he's into filmmaking. And he was like, I really got this idea of this elderly couple traveling, trying to get somewhere. And I was like, I think it's a great idea. And he was like, yeah, you should write it. And I said, dude, I write poems. I've never written a novel. And he was like, well, you got to write your first one. So I was like, okay. So, you know, I took some time and started writing it and developing it. And it did take a little bit of a different path than what he saw when we got back together with it. Because one of the things, I wanted it to be a challenge. So one of the challenges that I gave myself was I didn't want it to be the predictable, two poor black people greyhounded and hitchhiking through the country. I just felt like I want to see us better than that as an African-American man. Mm-hmm. And so, one, I give them money, but I also give them status. Because what I didn't want was, I'm from Mississippi. I lived in Milwaukee. Now I'm in Charlotte. And I've met a lot of people. And I've heard too many stories of elderly African-Americans that disappear off the grid because nobody's checking on them. Nobody's looking for them. So I didn't want this to be one of those cases. I wanted these people to start on this journey, but people are wondering, where are they? Where are they at? And so one, I gave them money. Two, I gave them status so it's not predictable. And I also wanted to be able to tell the story of an elderly black man. We don't get to see on the screen or in books a lot of stories of elderly people still in love, still together. They loved each other, but one passed away. Or they loved each other, but they couldn't stay together. You know, so I wanted to show where these people are still together, they've been together the whole time, and that it's a different type of love. And so with that being the case, and with me wanting the central character, Frank, to be the focal point, I never tell you her name, and I never tell you what she's dying from.
Oh, wow.
Because I want you to focus in on what this journey, and not just the physical journey, but the emotional journey that Frank is going on with this trip. And so with those challenges, it did take a while to write, because it's hard to have a person in a book for a whole book, and they're talking and you're talking to them, but they never mention the name.
I think it is too, and I want to read it for all of the reasons that you mentioned, you know. And when you said that part of where, you know, as black people age or African Americans age, then they're just kind of like off the map. And I think that it is very noble, the efforts that you put forth in this book. Now, there's a question that I have that just really stuck out like a thumb. It is mentioned in the summary that I received that Frank is dealing with an irrational hope. What is an irrational hope?
An irrational hope is a hope that you know there is no way if I do X, Y, and Z that A is going to happen. But I'm going to do X, Y, and Z anyway. I'm going to do it anyway because there's a possibility that the irrational can happen for me.
That's
for
heavy.
For instance, I'll give you a comical one that I'm probably dealing with right now.
Okay.
My son did not do what he was supposed to do in class this past 6 weeks. He is acting really good right now with an irrational hope that I'm going to change my mind about some of these Christmas presents.
Boy, Dan, man, I knew you were going to go there with that. So you explained that very, very well. What's the feedback been like about the book?
The people that have read it, I actually had some people read it before I even sent it to the publisher and to get it printed and everything. They all love it. The one thing that, and I'll admit that artistically sometimes I'm stubborn. One of my really good friends, we had a fierce debate about some of the insecurities that show through Frank in this time. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I was trying to get her to understand, and which I hope when other people read the book they'll see my point of view, or they may see hers. I might get a whole bunch of emails and Facebook messages saying, "Nope, Deidre was right." But I feel like that there has to be some insecurities in him. He can't be strong all the time.
Right.
There's no such thing as a person that's strong all the time. And so rather than I didn't want to write this physical Superman, this emotional Superman, because to be honest, there's no such thing. We all have an insecurity. We all have a weakness. And so when you read it, Frank is a flawed character. And so she didn't agree with some of the flaws, but I think he has to have flaws.
Most definitely, and it's realistic. And I'm so glad that you put those in there, because I was looking at this thing on OWN, this show, and they were talking about colonoscopy, and there's this stigma about, you know, manhood and, you know, all of those crazy thoughts, you know, that could wind up having somebody 6 feet under. So I'm glad that you did give him flaws, because as black men, we do have flaws. And so as I look at the clock and I'm looking at it ticking down, I did want to get this question in. How has writing this book fed your soul?
How has it, said it again now?
How has writing this book fed your soul?
Well, one of the things, you and I just getting to know each other over the past 20 minutes, but I'm a very confident person. But my confidence, I will admit, lies within the things that I know that I do. And so I really took my time on getting the book published and getting it out, to be honest with you, because I was afraid. I was like, everybody, I can go to a poetry set in almost any city, any major city in the country, and people are going to be like, oh, yeah, you're the dude from Def Jam. You're the dude from Def Poetry. And I can get on stage, and I know that I got a poem that's going to fit the equation, and I can rock it, and it's going to work. But I've never written a book before. And so to get to completion on this, the feeding of my soul is, it has really helped me with the next book that I'm writing. Because I'm going into it with a lot more confidence than I went into this one.
Well, that's beautiful, and I've been happy to have you as a guest, even though we started a little late. It definitely was worth, you were definitely, definitely worth the wait. And so what final thoughts would you, well, first of all, where can we get your book?
Right now it's available for downloads. You can pick them up at, you can download it from Amazon.com for Kindles. And then for other smart devices and the Nook, you can download it from BarnesandNoble.com for $4.99. And then we're also starting to do the pre-sale for the hard copies for people that don't download books, so you want that physical touch feel. You can actually go to my website, www.iamdanvon.com. And I have a store page on there with a lot of my other works and with the book, I-57, as well.
Okay, that sounds great. Thank you for getting all that in, because I definitely wanted to make sure that people knew where to get your book, because it does sound very intriguing. And for all the right reasons, I just fell in love with it even more listening to you talk about it. And so you are definitely you're definitely a remarkable creative, and I'm so glad that I had you here on the show, and you're most certainly welcome back when you have released some other works. And but just, you know, this is the beginning of a great networking friendship, and anything I could do to help you promote your work, most definitely. Are there any final thoughts, Dan, that you would like to leave the listeners with this evening?
I hope that they get the book, and I hope that they enjoy it. I'm really appreciative to you for having this venue for authors as myself that are beginning to branch out into other venues and other areas for us to actually have this platform. So I thank you and applaud you for doing this, and I hope they enjoy the book.
Well, you're very welcome. And listeners of A Touch of Grace, I want to thank you. I did dedicate this show tonight to the memory of the late Nelson Mandela, a great man. And most certainly, we were talking to a great man here this evening, Daniel Vaughn, author Daniel Vaughn, the author of I-57, The Journey Home. Go out and support what Daniel's doing and what all the artists are doing at this show. And most definitely during this holiday season, as we see that, you know, the great man Nelson Mandela is no more, take this as a time to remember those you love and hold them in your heart while they're here, because once they're gone, we won't be seeing them until we make the same transition. So on behalf of A Touch of Grace, I'd like to say happy holidays. And Daniel, you have a great evening.
You do the same, sir.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.